You're listening to CKLN 88.1 FM on Prisoners' Justice Day, Friday, August 10th. Robert King Wilkerson, one of the prisoners known as the Angola Three, was released this past February from the Louisiana State Penitentiary after spending 29 years in solitary confinement for a crime that he did not commit. Wilkerson was sentenced to life without parole on charges fabricated by racist prison officials intent on crushing his organizing efforts in the struggle for black liberation. Albert Woodfox and Herman Wallace, the other two members of the Angola Three, were also sentenced to life for crimes they did not commit, and to this day are still incarcerated in solitary at Angola. While in prison, Woodfox and Wallace founded the Angola chapter of the Black Panther Party in 1971. Wilkerson joined them a year later. They actively organized for prisoners' rights at Louisiana State Pen, a complex of plantations that the state purchased and converted into a prison at the turn of the century. The prison is called Angola, as most of its former slaves came from the African country of the same name. Angola is still a slave plantation, as prisoners labor 6 days a week harvesting cotton and sugarcane from dawn till dusk. Selected inmates are issued rifles and allowed to serve as guards. I'd like to welcome Robert King Wilkerson to the show. Since your release last February, you've been actively fighting for the release of Albert Woodfox and Herman Wallace. Can you tell us about this?
Yes, that's true. As you stated, I was released February 8, 2001, and since that time I have been fighting for the release of Albert Woodfox and Herman Wallace. When I left Angola, I made a commitment that I would do so, and then I'm committed to the struggle in general, and because that's the reason that I was in Angola for as long as I was, for 31 years and 29 years in solitary confinement. So the pace in this struggle was set for me, but the fact that Herman Wallace and Albert Woodfox remains in jail, convicted for a crime in which they didn't commit it, and all the evidence shows that they were innocent, that they were framed because they were members of the Black Panther Party, this kind of given me much more of an incentive, if I needed any, to continue, you know, to fight for them, and plus the fact that there are a lot of guys in Angola who are in Angola who have been honestly wrongfully convicted for crimes in which they didn't commit. And I always point out that America decries Russia and China for violation of human rights, and right here in their own backyard, it can't seem to see the beam or recognize the beam in its own eyes. COINTELPRO, you know, it came to height in 1970 with the emergence of the Black Panther Party. But COINTELPRO always, you know, was here. It was way back then with Marcus Garvey back in the 1920s or so. But like I say, it reached height with J. Edgar Hoover, you know, when he decided he wanted to decimate the Panthers. So by our becoming members of the Black Panther Party, and even though we were in prison, this concept was a carryover to state officials who decided to employ the same type of tactic that the FBI used to destroy the Panthers on the outside. So when we were activists on the inside of prison, well, the state officials, taking a cue from Jago and the FBI, decided to do the same thing with Panthers that they already had in their clutches. So they decided to frame us for charges for crime in which we hadn't committed. And all the evidence shows that Herman Wallace and Albert Woodfox, they were actually innocent, that they were framed because they were members of the Black Panther Party, and they was active in prison in bringing down some of the prison brutality and the racism that existed at that time.
Back in 1972, you joined Woodfox and Wallace in organizing a chapter of the Black Panther Party while in prison. How did the Angola chapter get started?
Well, actually, it was Herman Wallace and Albert Woodfox. They preceded, because even though we all went to Angola around the same time, I was returned back to the New Orleans Parish Prison, and Albert Woodfox joined the Black Panther Party sometime in late 69, early 70, when he was on a run. He had escaped from the New Orleans Parish Prison, and he met up with the Panther 21 out in the Queens of the Tombs, and this is when he joined. Herman Wallace and myself joined in 1970. I was arrested in 1970 for an unrelated charge. We all had unrelated charges for an armed robbery. And I met the Black Panther Party while I was in the New Orleans Parish Prison in September 1970. And they were speaking to things that, they were addressing things that I was feeling and couldn't articulate at the time. So I embraced the party doctrine and became a member. And as a result of becoming a member, I also became a target. So what happened is, Herman Wallace and Albert Woodfox went to Angola in 19, uh, 1970. He went back to Angola, rather, in 1970, and I think it was like, no, I'm sorry, it was November 1971. I also went back in November 1971, but I was sent back to the New Orleans Parish Prison on a subsequent charge, and it was then that Herman Wallace and Albert Woodfox began the Black Panther Party in the prison. I later joined them around April 1972, after the incident with the guard that was found, or who was found slain in one of the dormitories in the man prison. And they were the ones, you know, who initially started the Black Panther Party, and I joined them, like I said, some months later. We all were in CCR, and we continued the ideology or the ideology of the Black Panther Party, and we continued to struggle while we were being held in solitary confinement in CCR at the time, which is closed cell restriction. That's what CCR means.
Now, Angola still operates on the plantation model. Can you talk about this and the other conditions that prisoners endure?
It was a former plantation, but I call it LSP, Louisiana State Plantation, right now. Present-day plantation is no different. But it was named after the African country, Angola, because the belief is that most African who were slaves during Chattel were sent to that plantation, sent in this area, in the Louisiana area. In the Tunica Hills, this is where it's located at. It was known as, at that time, quote, plantation for slaves, but later around the turn of the century, it was turned into once the slavery ended, it was turned into a prison. It really was, from my understanding, a private prison ran by one individual who eventually got some state funds. It wasn't until some years later that the state really took over Angola, but this person who really had this land and who used it, he used former slaves and immediate descendants of slaves to work the plantation. At that time, I'm told that slaves, being released from bondage, actual bondage, legal bondage, having no place to go, many were arrested and given trumped-up charges and sent to Angola just for free labor. It's supposed to have been a prison, but they were sent there for labor. And then it was afterwards that after the state took over, it was just as bad as it was when this guy has, his own particular farm or plantation, because I think the lifespan, they say, of the average prisoner in Angola during the turn of the century was no more than about maybe three years. In other words, they literally worked the prisoners to death, or slaves. They were still slaves, but they worked the prisoners to death. And when Albert and Herman went to Angola, and when I subsequently went to Angola, those slave-like conditions existed. You know, you had, even though it was, the state had taken over the plantation, what you had families, and you had a system of nepotism, because one family member would come to Angola, he might be considered the patriarch, and his son would follow in his footsteps, and his brother-in-law, his nephew. At the time, he wasn't hiring females. Females didn't come until around the mid-70s, but it was all male, and it was at that time, there was not enough free, or what we call free personnel. So what happened is those prisoners who had life sentences or, some other similar type sentence, they were given guns. They wore different clothes than a regular inmate. They wore khaki clothes. The inmate at the time had called big stripes. And inmate guards were the one who took up the slack, and there was enough free labor or free personnel. And I also know this, that during that same time, if a inmate guard or a guard who was a prisoner, if he had a gun and if he killed an inmate, it was like a merit system given to them. They would get time off from their sentence. Many of them on a life sentence did no more than about 5, 6 years, 7 years the most, and they was released. because many of them had killed. I've known one time inmate guards killed 2-3 in one day. You know, they also took part in beating inmates. And so then you had the few free personnel, you know, who the guards worked for, and they were considered bosses or, you know, whatever you want to call them, or chiefs. And they had the last say, so in everything, it was still that slave type, master slave type mentality that existed. There was a lot of prison rapes going on, free guards taking part in selling of certain inmates. And it was, you know, it was under the scope of all this that Alvin and Harmon, when they got to Angola, they decided to put into it. There were like 17-hour working hours. I mean, they were paying like something like 2 cents an hour, and there was a lot of killing going on among, you know, the inmates. They, you know, slave rebelling against each other, if you want to put it that way. And Alvin and Harmon tried to, instill in the prisoners a new concept, a new philosophy about what was going on, and they brought the ideology of the Black Panther Party with them, and they decided, started holding classes and what's not in the man prison. And it was then that, as I said, they were already targets because they were members of the Black Panther Party, but they became bigger targets. And this was revealed when this guard was found slain in the dormitory. People who were blamed for it first were members of the Black Panther Party. And as I said, I wasn't at the prison at the time. I joined them some 6 months later, but the fact that I was a member of the Black Panther Party, when I finally did go back to Angola, which I had left in November 71, and they returned me in April of 72, about a week after the guard was slain, they put me on the investigation, and they investigated me from 1972 until February the 8th, 2001, when I was finally released.
And we're just going to go for a short break, but stay tuned. More from Robert King Wilkerson when we return. You're listening to CKLN 88.1 FM. You're listening to CKLN 88.1 FM on Prisoners' Justice Day. And we're back speaking with Robert King Wilkerson, one of the prisoners known as the Angola Three. Wilkerson was released just this past February from the Louisiana State Penitentiary after spending 29 years in solitary confinement for crime that he did not commit. Albert Woodfox and Herman Wallace, the other two members of the Angola Three, remain behind bars. In both your case and the cases of Woodfox and Wallace, prosecutors relied entirely on the testimonies of inmates who were either paid outright for their testimonies or who were coerced into giving statements.
Well, yes. In the case of Albert and Herman, it has been revealed that one guy was paid for his testimony a carton of cigarettes a week, and we have letters, you know, proven, you know, from the prison officials to other bureaucracies attesting to this, that this guy was paid for his services for testifying against Alvin and Herman. Also, this guy initially had the electric chair, and even though it was after Furman versus George in 72 that his sentence got commuted to a life sentence, he had a life sentence. And what happened was, as a result of his testifying against Harmon and Albert, prison officials written letters on his behalf to the pardon board and other high officials seeking clemency for him as a result of this. So he actually, you know, prior to his being sent to a part of the penitentiary to live by himself in a shack or a house by himself away from other inmates, he was also eventually given clemency, and he was released from prison, and all of this as a result of his testifying against Alvin and Herman. So, yeah, this inmate was paid. Another inmate who was actually charged with Herman and Albert, this guy here was in their letters show that he was beaten, intimidated, threatened, and coerced, and he had fixed number of years. What they did to get him to testify against Herman Wallace during Herman trial, was to give him a sentence and run it concurrent with what he had. So he actually received no time for, even though he testified and lied on Herman and included himself that he had took part in it, he received no sentence whatsoever, because the time that he did receive, it ran concurrent with the time he already had. So, yeah, it was a lot of chicanery that took place in the conviction of Herman and Alvin. And we have, record proof of this, but, the courts are reluctant to admit that they made mistakes, just like in my case. You know, it took a while, even though the man who actually killed the guy in self-defense testified at my trial that he acted alone and in self-defense, and even though there were 9 knives found and there were blood on only 1 knife, and even though the coroner reported that all the wounds were made with 1 knife, and even though the guys who had lied on me, as I said, recanted, it still took me, after that recantation, about 12 years for me to be released from Angola. So, the court, even though in the face of all this evidence, they are reluctant, to admit that they made a mistake.
In 1974, your conviction was reversed, but then you were tried again in
1975. Well, yeah, it was reversed on what they call, quote, a technicality, because there were no women on the grand jury, and, out of law states that there should be a cross-section of the community. I was indicted by an all-male grand jury. And when I went to trial, it was revoiced twice, because after my direct appeal, they revoiced it on the ground that I said throughout trial and throughout the selection of the jury, veneer, in the paneling, in the seating of the jury, I was bound and gagged, had tape over my mouth, I was handcuffed, and I was shackled, and as I say, I said through this throughout the trial. So the Louisiana State Supreme Court revoiced that particular conviction, and I went back to trial, and I was retried, and I was convicted again. And some years later, the sentence was revoiced again, but it was revoiced, as I pre-stated, on the ground that there were no women on the grand jury that indicted me. But what happened is, the laws are pretty fickle, The appeal court, the panel on the Supreme Court that did overturn my decision, once it got to me, there were a couple of guys who had got revoiced before I did, and they had a new trial. But because probably I was a target, and because, my background, what happened is the panel that revoiced my sentence, they also suggested in bank, as a result of the Louisiana District Attorney Association and the ADA in New Orleans. They suggested that if that revoice or that precedent stand that revoiced my sentence, it would affect too many people, which wasn't true because my sentence was about 20 years old at the time. But anyway, the panel that revoiced my sentence suggested in bank, which, mean that the full court would hear, the full Federal Appeals Court, and about 14 judges heard it after that, and they revoiced the panel's decision to grant me a new trial. So it wasn't until another ruling came up, another precedent that was set that pointed out if a person could show evidence that he was actually innocent, and that, but, if for evidence that were omitted during trial, but for this evidence, no jury would have found him guilty, he or she can go back to court. And this is what I went back to court in on, a repetitive petition based on my actual innocence. But the catch is, you would have to have a constitutional violation. And they had previously ruled that I didn't have any constitutional violation, because the women's on a grand jury, they say I couldn't get that because I was barred by another precedent. And so we had an uphill battle. The court had appointed an attorney to represent me. His name is Christopher Abelie. And by this time, his commission had expired, but believing in my innocence, he got back and he started representing me pro bono, and he and I worked together. And what he did, he convinced the court that there were, in fact, a constitutional violation, because I was denied the right to cross-examine the witness who had incentive to lie. And even though the court had dismissed this, at one time, it was this time around, in 98, they took a a second look at it, because evidence of so much overwhelming evidence of my actual innocence. And even though they said there was overwhelming guilt previously, but we presented so much evidence of my overwhelming innocence until they decided, and going back on their own, you know, on their own precedent, on their own audit, previous audit, that there were in fact a constitutional violation, because the law that I was going back in on, which was a Missouri law, Sloop versus Delo, that allow you to go back in on a repetitive petition or a repeat petition if you were actually innocent. And I was going back in on this particular law, but the requirement is that you have to had a violation occurred, or a constitutional violation occurred at trial, because in this country, and it may be the same in Canada, innocence is not a constitutional claim. So I had to show that there was a constitutional violation. Anyway, make a long story short, this time around, the court, because we had a lot of, you know, people focusing on our cases, we had, you know, a support group here in the States, and this time around, the court took a second look and said, well, yeah, in fact, his constitutional right was violated. So they sent it back to the Middle District Court, which is also a federal court that had previously denied me. But in denying me, this court stated that I had made a sufficient showing of actual innocence, but there was no constitutional violation. So he denied me. And when we appealed it, well, an appeal court, a three-judge panel said, well, yeah, that was a constitutional violation. So now you got, you know, appeal court, three judges on the appeal court say it was constitutional violation. You got one federal judge in the Middle District say, well, there was an actual innocence, so, but he denied on the ground that there were no constitutional violation, but then he was overruled by this three-judge panel. So therefore, they couldn't do anything, seeing, you know, the case slip away from them. I think the judge, the federal judge in the Middle District Court contacted the state district attorney and perhaps told him to see could he cut a deal. And what they did is they offered me a deal that would put me out immediately. And it was they charged me with conspiracy, which it should be known that Herman and Albert case are not like mine. I was in 1973, I was, you know, charged with taking part in the death of an inmate and was lied on by other inmates. Herman and Albert was charged in the death of a prison guard. And so our cases, and we are runs parallel, because in the sense that we were all framed and we were all targeted because we were members of Black Panther Party, but we don't have the same charge. Even though both the charges of murder, Herman and Albert was charged with murder, and they were charged with murder of, like I said, of a prison guard, and I was charged with murder of an inmate, or having taken part in the murder of an inmate.
Few people have spent as long in solitary as you, 29 years. Can you describe the effect that has?
Well, you've had different periods. You had different periods of solitary confinement. At one point, it's still that way now. So you are in your cell 23 hours a day. You come out for an hour. You get an hour. The court decreed that. They wouldn't even let you out for an hour if the federal court had not decreed that. But you get an hour in the hall. You're in your cell 23 hours a day. You're allowed to go on an exercise yard 3 days a week, barring the inclement weather. If the weather is inclement, well, you just don't go out and you lose that day. And you'll still get your hour in the hall. Everywhere you go, you're handcuffed in your shack or you're searched, you're pretty tight. There are limitations on the personal goods that you can have. But at one time, I was in solitary confinement for 7 years. It took a court ruling to get us three-day exercises on the yard. Prior to that time, we wasn't getting any exercise at all on the yard. All exercise we got were on the till during the hour in which we had on the till. And during that time, prior to the court ruling that gave us this period on the yard, it was much more, the rules and the regulation and which had to go through were much more rigid than they are now. As I say, you had different degrees of solitariness. It depends on what administration you're under. You know, Angola is a vast place, vast area of land. It's like you got many smaller plantations or prisons inside the main prison, which is Angola. They're called Camp D, Camp C, Camp J, Camp I, you know, Camp A or whatever. and you have a warden for each one of these camps, and each of them have their own agenda. You know, you may have one come that might allow you to have certain few more privileges, and another one may come and want to set his own barometer, his own pace, and they'll take that from you. So guys are constantly struggling to try to, you know, to effect some changes and so forth. But, you know, in the case of myself and Alvin and Herman, even though we fought, you know, to effect a lot of changes, and we made some changes, our idea was not to really beautify or to try to beautify prisons. We were trying to convince the courts of our innocence. We were trying to get out of Angola, and that is the purpose now for Herman and Albert, is to try to get out of Angola. And it really wouldn't matter being in a cell the way we see it. If you're in a cell 23 hours a day for 29 years, they could give you, you know, Cadillac, if it can fit in your cell, a woman, you know, computer, which, you know, you don't have all that, but, you know, our concept is this: if we could have all this, we would forsake it. Because 29 years in solitary confinement with whatever they give you is cruel and unusual punishment if you're in your cell 23 hours a day. And this is the way we perceive it, and this is this is how we operate from this point, that it wouldn't matter what we got. And even though we struggle to make some changes, and we got a few changes made, and where restrictions are not quite, you know, as they were at one time or another, the point is this, that just being in the cell 23 hours a day is cruel and unusual punishment. If that would happen to an animal, people in this country would scream. But they allow it to happen to human beings.
To get involved, contact the National Coalition to Free the Angola 3 at 510-595-8264 or by email at scott@prisonactivist.org. You're listening to Prisoners Justice Day Radio on CKLN 88.1 FM.
Change us to that ship. Treat us like a motherfucking bunch of misfits. Then say stop talking all that slave shit. Watch we uprise, we gonna uprise. Watch we uprise, watch we uprise. Fuck yeah, I'll go back to Africa. Come back and send my whole family out after ya.
Of the world.